Toastmasters, Whippy Toastmasters, listeners and friends. This is the Talk Show with Talkers here on IrishTalkers.com. Now, if I don't sound quite like my normal ebullient self, it's because I woke up this morning with no voice. Fortunately, it did come back, sort of, so you'll have to put up with a slightly croaky me for the rest of this podcast. Right, where are we now? We are, of course, you know, we're the Talk Show for Talkers. We're on IrishTalkers.com. That's our website. And our email address is info@IrishTalkers.com. And we sometimes dabble in Facebook, not very often, but we do try, as the Talk Show for Talkers. I'm joined this week again by the faithful Mr. Finnegan.
As opposed to the unfaithful Mr. Finnegan.
Well, I make no comment. And we, as always, have a full show for you. This is our magazine version of the show. James is going to be talking about extraordinary teams. We'll have a word of the week. And I'm going to be dabbling into the icebreaker, not quite as you would normally think about it. Okay, so let's start off with James and his extraordinary teams. James, tell us all.
Thank you very much, Moira. This was influenced to me by an article in the January edition of the Toastmaster magazine, when it talked about, ironically, extraordinary teams and how they're built. Now, I've worked under the assumption that nothing of lasting value is ever achieved alone. And I'm fortunate that in my background, I have experience of working with groups and teams in sport, in performance, in choral singing. And instead of trying to find something that would fit in with our outside activities, I now found that this article connected with me in a way that Toastmasters confirms what I have learned over the years in my outside life. So what are the qualities of an extraordinary team? Well, first of all, clear and achievable goals. And I was reminded of a gentleman with whom I started rowing many, many years ago. His name is Steve Redgrave. And between the two of us, we have 5 Olympic gold medals and 9 world championships, all of which belong to Steve. But the lessons I learned, ironically, come back to me every time I think of a District 71 meeting, because our motto this year is pulling together with purpose. And there is no better example of that than a boat of rowers. Steve, whether it's in the doubles, the fours or the eights, won 5 Olympic gold medals in every Olympics from 1984 to 2000. And last year, I was privileged to meet up again with Steve, and he, in an act of extraordinary generosity, allowed me to hold his gold medal from 1996 in Atlanta. It is as close as I have ever got to actually having an Olympic gold medal. But fair play to him, he wrestled me to the ground and prized it out of my cold, dead hands. The second thing, of course, you require are defined roles. A team is a group of individuals working together, and it is that sense of belonging, where you fit in the team, where you fit in the project, that gives you that sense of belonging and that sense of togetherness. I'm reminded of President Kennedy walking around Cape Canaveral, as it was then, just after him announcing that the ambition of the United States was to bring a man to the moon and return him safely to Earth before the end of the decade. He was walking around the cafeteria, and he met a man who was mopping the floor. And the president asked him, "What are you doing?" And the man replied, "I'm helping to put a man on the moon." Isn't that wonderful? The other advantage of a group of individuals coming together is you have that valued diversity. Each individual member of the team bringing their own experience, their own knowledge, their own ambition to the shared purpose. And a number of years ago, I was honored to hear a talk by Dawson Stelford. You probably are asking, who's that? Well, he is the man who led the first successful Irish climb to Mount Everest back in 1993. They set out with a purpose, and the purpose was to plant an Irish flag on the top of Everest. Of course, everybody wanted to be the person that planted the flag. But Dawson said that he tried to encourage everybody that was in the group to feel as though if one person put the flag in the top, everyone put the flag in the top. Now, there was a cost to this, because some people said that unless they were the person to plant the flag, they were not going to take part. However, despite that supposed handicap, it was a successful expedition. And when you think about it, back in 1993, climbing Everest was still a relatively rare event, not like now where you see the photographs of them queuing to go up, like attending the New Year sales. But there are many different aspects to climbing Everest. There's logistics, there's travel, there's setting up a base camps. You don't just start at the bottom and inch your way up. The fourth component of an extraordinary team is open and clear communication. Lots of feedback, lots of empathy, and clarity. I'm reminded of the old story of a journalist who needed to complete an article on Cary Grant and sent a telegram. Yes, that's how long ago it is. Sent a telegram to the film set with four words. How old Cary Grant? And he got a reply back. Old Cary Grant, fine. How are you? As I say, open and clear communication. Tell him what you want. Tell him what you need. The fifth component is attention to detail. And amongst the many people I worked with in football, the person that has made the biggest impact on me was Giovanni Trapattoni, who was manager of the Ireland team and a very successful manager, all things considered. But of course, Giovanni Trapattoni was a gifted player. He won two European Cups and numerous league titles. But as a manager, he is one of the few people to have won league titles in four different countries. He's the only person to have won every major European trophy with one club, Juventus. Little did I know back in 1977, when I was watching Manchester United play Juventus, and this demon was on the sideline, yelling and screaming and fighting for his team. I thought he was a giant. And as Moira will confirm, there are very few people in this world I need to look down on physically, but Giovanni Trapattoni is one of them. But when you saw him in action, he grew. But his attention to detail. When he was manager of the Irish team, he would ask me, who was in charge of refereeing, what could I tell him about the referee who was doing the next match? And it got to the stage where I made up a dossier of every referee who refereed Ireland during his term of office. It was that what might be considered an insignificant attention to detail that made the difference for him. And I know that has had an effect on many of the people with whom Giovanni Trapattoni had worked. The final definition of an extraordinary team is effective decision-making. Again, while I was in charge of the referees in Ireland, I asked myself, what group of people have to make instant decisions? And when you think about it, pilots are the people who have to make instant decisions. They have to use their experience and their knowledge. And sometimes they have to overrule the instruments that are giving them false information. I would advise you no more than to see the film Sully, to see a man whose experience and expertise told him what to do when everything else was telling him to do the opposite. Another book I'd recommend to you is Michael Smith's biography of Tom Crean, an unsung hero. Tom Crean was an Irish polar explorer, and he's the only man who worked with both Scott and Shackleton on the polar ice, and indeed spent longer on the polar ice than both of those explorers. But to read the experience of Tom Crean in Smith's biography is to see leadership, two different styles of leadership, but leadership at its utmost, because lives depended on making the right decision. As Michael Smith says in the book, we know more about the surface of the planet Mars than they knew about the South Pole. Their idea of preparation was, well, it might be a bit chilly down there. Let's put an extra jumper on. There are extraordinary teams in all our lives. I've been able to nitpick a couple, and I could do as many more again. Read the article in the J. January edition of the Toastmaster magazine. It's fascinating. And see what extraordinary teams you have been in or you have led. I look forward to seeing the results. Back to you, Moira.
Thank you very much, James. That was very interesting. Hey, I love the Cary Grant quote. Yeah, old Cary Grant, well, how you? Yes, okay. I believe we have a word of the week. I believe I might actually have accidentally used it in my introduction. Over to you, James, for the word.
I was wondering if you noticed that I would notice that you used it again. Let us hope that our listeners use it with as much gay abandon. And the word, friends and colleagues, is ebullient, an adjective that means having or showing liveliness, enthusiasm, and being full of energy. It comes from the Latin ebulliere, which means to bubble out. But it came into active use, I believe, in the late 1500s, when it meant boiling or bubbling, which meant either oil or water, presumably before they poured it over the castle walls. Even as I speak, I can see Moira flapping through her thesaurus with an ebullience of energy.
I'm doing my best, James. I'm overflowing with enthusiasm, yes. I am overflowing with fervour, excitement, high-spirited. And, yes, as you say, bubbling up like a boiling liquid. It's quite a good word. I quite like it. And it is a word within my own lexicon, as you discovered earlier on. It was coincidence, I think, rather than happenstance, or maybe the other way around, that I did use it when it was the word of the week. It fitted the narrative, as they say. 1590, first recorded, apparently, 1590 to 1600. So there you are. Let's move on then to part three, which is talking about the icebreaker. However, it's not the icebreaker as you would normally think of it. You see, I recently purchased my fourth path. Now, you may ask me, Moira, why are you purchasing a fourth path when you haven't yet finished any of the first three? Well, I'm going to rest my argument on that for another day. But suffice it to say that I did purchase another path. And as such, of course, I had to do another icebreaker. So it got me thinking, what do you do when you have to give another icebreaker at the beginning of a new path? Do you say, like a lot of people say, oh, for goodness sake, why on earth do I have to do another icebreaker when I've already done one or two or three? Well, there's a very good reason for it. Apart from the fact that it makes Toastmasters International's life much easier because they don't have to do something separate for those who've already completed the path. Let's put that aside. It's actually very good for you because it makes you think. First of all, how did you do in your first icebreaker? Your first icebreaker, of course, would have been when you were green as a speaker. You wouldn't have known a huge amount about all the things that you've learnt as you go through your path. So now you've done a path, or two, or three, in my case, and you've got to do another icebreaker. So do you repeat the icebreaker that you did before? Or do you change it? Now, my thought was, well, my first icebreaker was in the old education program. When I came to Pathways, of course, I had to do another icebreaker. And I think the first one I did was a repeat of my very first icebreaker, but delivered probably somewhat better. But I didn't rewrite it. I just kept the same icebreaker. Then the next one, when I did my second path, I thought, well, I really ought to do something different. So what can I do? And my first one was a brief run through a bit of history about my family and a bit of history about me. So I chose a different thing, and it was all around the number 15. And what happened when I was 15? What happened when I got married, and how long the marriage lasted, which happened to be 15, and then the second marriage, and how long that lasted, happened to be 15, and then multiples of 15, things that happened at age 30, age 45, age 60, and so on. And that made quite an amusing story, and it went down quite well. And I think I gave a variety, a slightly different version of that at my third pass. But now my fourth pass, what am I going to do now? Well, I looked back at my history. I thought, well, I can talk about what we are maybe predestined for in life and what I started out in life as when I left school, and how that developed into a career and then a second career and then a third career, and how these changes came about through developing my own talents, or at least taking those talents and trying to make the best use of them. And I think the speech went down very well, because of course after three paths nearly completed and a DTM, I'm not exactly inexperienced at writing speeches. In fact, I did what I normally do, and I wrote the speech about 4 hours before having to give it. Something I don't recommend that you do. Okay, as you get more and more experience, it becomes easier and easier to write these speeches. But as they say, if you fail to prepare, you should prepare to fail. So I consider myself lucky. So, what do you do when you have to give your next icebreaker? Well, what I suggest you do is to keep it simple and look for just one particular aspect of your life and concentrate on that aspect alone. Now, as you know, when we're preparing a speech, we want to have an opening, three sections in the middle, and a closing. So you want to have something you can expand upon for three or four different things, but no more. Don't try and complicate it as we tended to do in our first icebreaker, where we thought, well, we have to tell people everything about us, you know, where we went to school and how old we were and how, when we first got married and how many children we had and what was our first job and so on and so on and so on, which is all very interesting and tells us something about us to our members. But of course, when you're on your second or third icebreaker, your members already know quite a bit about you because you've been making speeches in front of them for some time. So try and find something that is slightly more niche and develop that a bit more. Okay, so next time you do your icebreaker, throw the old one away, sit down and think about something that you can make a lot more interesting and a lot more fun for your audience to listen to, and something which maybe they didn't know too much about you. So that's it. My voice has just about managed to last the course with lots of croaking and coughing off air. James, do you have anything you'd like to contribute to the esoteric subject of icebreaking?
Well, Moira, well done. You got through there, and it was a damn close thing for a while. But well done, well done. Yeah, I must admit, I find the idea of multiple icebreakers to be intensely boring, because strangely enough, I don't like talking about me. But I love hearing the stories of the fellow members and the places they've been and what they've done. And I think that's brilliant advice that you've given there, to just pick one little aspect and go off on that tangent. There are gems out there. There's fantastic stories to be told. But as I agree with you, this biographical, I was born in and I went to school here, you know, I kind of tune out a little bit. Not too much, because they might ask me a question afterwards.
Indeed. Well, on that slightly positive note, let's bring this episode to a close. Thanks for listening. Thanks for following us through right to the end. It's good of you to do so. We appreciate it. Do get in touch with us. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you'd like us to talk about in future. And we'll see what we can do. So, from myself, James. No, I'm not James. I'm Moira. From me, Moira O'Brien. And from Mr. James Finnegan. We'll bid you goodbye. And we'll see you next week for another interview. Bye for now.
Goodbye now.